There was no movement in the air, no sound but her own breathing. Just the brilliant white light on one side and the heavy darkness on the other, waiting. Granny had listened to people who'd nearly died, but had come back, possibly because of a deft thump in the right place or the dislodging of some wayward mouthful that had gone down the wrong way. Sometimes they'd talked about seeing a light. That's where she ought to go, a thought told her. But was the light the way in or the way out? Death snapped his fingers. An image appeared on the sand in front of them. She saw herself kneeling in front of the anvil. She admired the dramatic effect. She'd always had a streak of theatrics, although she'd never admit it, and she appreciated, in a disembodied way, the strength with which she had thrust her pain into the iron. Someone had slightly spoiled the effect by putting a kettle on one end. Death reached down and took a handful of sand. He held it up and let it slip between his fingers.
"Choose," he said. "You are good at choosing, I believe."
"Is there any advice you could be giving me?" said Granny.
"Choose right."
Granny turned to face the sheer white brilliance and closed her eyes and stepped backwards. The light dwindled to a tiny distant point and vanished. The blackness was suddenly all around, closing in like quicksand. There seemed to be no way, no direction. When she moved, she didn't sense movement. There was no sound but the faint trickle of sand inside her head. And then, voices from her shadow.
"Because of you, some died who may have lived."
The words lashed at her, leaving livid lines across her mind.
"Some lived who surely would have died," she said.
The dark pulled at her sleeves.
"You killed."
"No, I showed the way."
"That's just words."
"Words is important," Granny whispered into the night.
"You took the right to judge others."
"I took the duty. I'll own up to it."
"I know every evil thought you've ever had."
"I know."
"The ones you'd never dare tell anyone."
"I know."
"All the little secrets never to be told."
"I know."
"How often you longed to embrace the dark."
"Yes."
"Such strength you could have."
"Yes."
"Embrace the dark."
"No."
"Give in to me."
"No."
"Lilith Weatherwax did." "Alison Weatherwax did."
"That's never been proved."
"Give in to me."
"No, I know you. I've always known you. The Count just let you out to torment me. But I've always known you were there. I've fought you every day of my life, and you'll get no victory now."
She opened her eyes and stared into the blackness.
"I knows who you are now, Esmeralda Weatherwax," she said. "You don't scare me no more."
The last of the light vanished. Granny Weatherwax hung in the dark for a time she couldn't measure. It was as if the absolute emptiness had sucked all the time and direction into it. There wasn't anywhere to go because there wasn't any anywhere. After a length of time without any measure, she began to hear another sound, the faintest of whispers on the borders of hearing. She pushed towards it. Words were rising through the blackness like little wriggling golden fish. She fought her way towards them, now that there was a direction. The slivers of light turned into sounds.
"And ask if you, in your infinite compassion, to see your way clear to possibly intervening here."
Not normally the kind of words she'd associate with light. Perhaps it was the way they were said, but they had a strange echo to them, a second voice woven in amongst the first voice, glued to every syllable.
"What compassion? How many people prayed at the stake? How foolish I look, kneeling like this."
Ah, one mind split in half. There were more Agneses in the world than Agnes dreamed of, Granny told herself. All the girl had done was give a thing a name, and once you give a thing a name, you give it a life. There was something else nearby, a glimmer a few photons across, which winked out as she looked for it again. She turned her attention away from a moment, then jerked it back. Again, the tiny spark blinked out. Something was hiding. The sand stopped rushing. Time was up. Now to find out what she was. Granny Weatherwax opened her eyes, and there was light. The coach swished to a halt on the mountain road. Water poured around its wheels. Nanny got out and paddled over to Igor, who was standing where the road wasn't. Water was foaming where it should have been.
Can we get across?
Said Igor.
Probably, but it'll be worse down below, where there's really bad runoff, said Nanny. The plains have been cut off all winter before now.
She looked at the other way. The road wound further into the mountains, awash but apparently sound.
Where's the nearest village that way? She said. One with a good stone building in it. Slake, isn't it? There's a coaching inn up there.
That's right. Slake.
Well, we ain't going anywhere on foot in this weather, said Nanny. Slake it's got to be, then.
She got back into the coach and felt it turn round.
Is there a problem? Said Magrat. Why are we going uphill?
Road's washed out, said Nanny.
We're heading into Uberwald?
Yes.
But there's werewolves and vampires.
Yes, but not everywhere. We should be safe on the main road. Anywhere, there's not much of a choice.
I suppose you're right, said Magrat reluctantly.
And it could be worse, said Nanny.
How?
Well, there could be snakes in here with us.
Agnes saw the rocks rush past, looked down and saw the foam of the swollen river. The world spun around her when Vlad stopped in mid-air. Water washed over her toes.
Let there be lightness, he said. You'd like to be as light as air, wouldn't you, Agnes?
We've got broomsticks, Agnes panted. Her life had just flashed past her eyes, and wasn't it dull,
Perdita added.
Useless, cumbersome, stupid things, he said, and they can't do this.
The walls of the gorge went past in a blur. The castle dropped away. Clouds drenched her. Then they unrolled as a silver-white fleece under the silent cold of the moon. Vlad wasn't beside her. Agnes, slowed in her rise, flung out her arms to grip what wasn't there and began to fall back. He appeared, laughing, and grabbed her around the waist.
Can they? He said.
Agnes couldn't speak. Her life passing in front of her eyes one way had met it passing in front of her eyes going the opposite direction, and words would fail her now until she could decide when now was.
And you haven't seen anything yet, said Vlad.
Wisps of cloud coiled behind them as he raced forward. The clouds vanished underneath them. They might have been as thin as smoke, but their presence, their imitation of groundness, had been a comfort. Now they were a departing edge and far below were the moonlit plains. Gurgled Agnes, too tense and terrified even to scream.
Whee! Crowed Perdita inside.
See that? Said Vlad, pointing. See the light all around the rim?
Agnes stared, because anything now was better than looking down. The sun was under the disk. Around the dark rim, though, it found its way up through the endless waterfall, creating a glowing band between the nighttime ocean and the stars. It was indeed beautiful, but Agnes felt that beauty was even more likely to be in the eye of the beholder if the feet of the beholder were on something solid. At 10,000 feet up, the eye of the beholder tends to water. Perdita thought it was beautiful. Agnes wondered if, should Agnes end up as a circle of pink splash marks on the rocks, Perdita would still be there.
Everything you want, whispered Vlad. Forever.
I want to get down, said Agnes.
He let go. There was this about Agnes's shape. It was a good one for falling. She turned automatically belly down, hair streaming behind her, and floated in the rushing wind. Oddly enough, the terror had gone. That had been fear of a situation out of her control. Now, arms outspread, skirts whipping her legs, eyes streaming in the freezing air, she could at least see what the future held, even if it was not big enough to hold very much. Perhaps she could hit a snowbank or deep water.
It might have been worth a try, said Perdita. He doesn't seem entirely bad.
Shut up.
It would just be nice if you could stop looking as though you were wearing saddlebags under your skirt.
Shut up.
And it'd be nice if you didn't hit the rocks like a balloon full of water.
Shut up!
Anyway, I can see a lake. I think I could sort of angle across towards it.
And at this speed, it would be like hitting the ground.
How do you know that? I don't know that, so how do you know?
Everyone knows that.
Vlad appeared alongside Agnes, lounging on the air as though it were a sofa.
Enjoying it, he said.
It's fine so far, said Agnes, not looking at him.
She felt him touch her wrist. There was no real sense of pressure, but the fall stopped. She felt as light as the air again.
"Why are you doing this?" she said. "If you're going to bite me, then get it over with."
"Oh, but I couldn't be having with that."
"You did it to Granny?" said Agnes.
"Yes, but when it's against someone's will, well, they end up so compliant.
little more than thinking food. But someone who embraces the night of their own volition, oh, that's another thing entirely, my dear Agnes. And you're far too interesting to be a slave. Tell me, said Agnes, as a mountain top floated by, have you had many girlfriends? He shrugged. One or two. Village girls, housemaids. And what happened to them, may I ask? Don't look at me like that. We still find employment for them in the castle. Agnes loathed him. Perdita merely hated him, which is the opposite pole to love and just as attractive. But Nanny said, if the worst came to the worst, and then he'll trust you, they've already got Granny. If I'm a vampire, she said, I won't know good from evil. That's a bit childish, isn't it? There are only ways of looking at the same thing. You don't always have to do what the rest of the world wants you to do.
Are you still toying with her?
Lacrimosa was walking towards them on the air. Agnes saw the other vampires behind her.
Bite her or let her go, the girl went on. Good grief, she's so blobby. Come on, father wants you. They're heading for our castle. Isn't that just too stupid?
This is my affair, lackey, said Vlad.
Every boy should have a hobby, but
really,
said Lacrimosa, rolling her black-rimmed eyes. Vlad grinned at Agnes.
Come with us, he said.
Granny did say you need to be with the others, Perdita pointed out.
Yes, but how will I find them when we're there? Said Agnes aloud.
Oh, we'll find them, said Vlad. I meant, do come. We don't intend to hurt your friends.
Much, said Lacrimosa.
Or, we could leave you here, said Vlad, smiling.
Agnes looked around. They had touched down on the mountain peak above the clouds. She felt warm and light, which was wrong. Even on a broomstick she'd never felt like this. She'd always been aware of gravity sucking her down, but with the vampire holding her arm, every part of her felt that it could float forever. Besides, if she didn't go with them, it was going to be either a very long or an extremely short journey down to the ground. Besides, she would find the other two, and you couldn't do that when you were dying in some crevasse somewhere. Besides, even if he did have small fangs and a terrible taste in waistcoats, Vlad actually seemed attracted to her. It wasn't even as if she had a very interesting neck. She made up both minds.
If you attached a piece of string to her, I suppose we could tow her like some sort of balloon, said Lacrimosa.
Besides, there was always the chance that at some point she might find herself in a room with Lacrimosa. And when that happened, she wouldn't need garlic, or a steak, or an axe. Just a little talk about people who were too unpleasant, too malicious, too thin. Just 5 minutes alone.
And perhaps a pin, said Perdita.
Under the rabbit hole, down below the bank, was a wide, low-roofed chamber. Tree roots wound among the stones in the wall. There were plenty of such things around Lancre. The kingdom had been there many years, ever since the ice withdrew. Tribes had pillaged, tilled, built, and died. The clay walls and reed thatch of the living houses had long since rotted and been lost, but down under the moundy banks, the abodes of the dead survived. No one knew now who'd been buried there. Occasionally the spoil heap outside a badger set would reveal a piece of bone or a scrap of corroded armour. The Lancrastians didn't go digging themselves, reckoning in their uncomplicated country way that it was bad luck to have your head torn off by a vengeful underground spirit. One or two of the old barrows had been exposed over the years, their huge stones attracting their own folklore. If you left your unshod horse at one of them overnight and placed a sixpence on the stone, in the morning the sixpence would be gone and you'd never see your horse again either. Down on the earth floor under the bank a fire was burning darkly, filling the barrow with smoke, which exited through various hidden crannies. There was a pear-shaped rock beside it. Verence tried to sit up, but his body didn't want to obey.
"Dinna scanna wishta," said the rock.
It unfolded its legs. It was, he realised, a woman, or at least a female, blue like the other pixies, but at least a foot high, and so fat that it was almost spherical. It looked exactly like the little figurines back in the days of ice and mammoths, when what men really looked for in a woman was quantity. For the sake of modesty, or merely to mark the equator, it wore what Verence could only think of as a tutu. The whole effect reminded him of a spinning top that he'd had when he was a child.
"The Kelda says," said a cracked voice by his ear, "that ye must get ready."
Verence turned his head the other way and tried to focus on a small wizened pixie right in front of his nose. Its skin was faded. It had a long white beard. It walked with two sticks.
Ready for what?
Good.
The old pixie banged its sticks on the ground.
Kraken schaden ich, Fiegel.
The blue men rushed at Verence from the shadows. Hundreds of hands grabbed him. Their bodies formed a human pyramid, pulling him upright against the wall. Some clung to the tree roots that looped across the ceiling, tugging on his nightshirt to keep him vertical. A crowd of others ran across the floor with a full-sized crossbow and propped it on a stone close to him.
I say,
Verence murmured. The Kelder waddled into the shadows and returned with her pudgy fists clenched. She went to the fire and held them over the flames.
Yin!
Said the old pixie.
I say, that's aimed right at my...
Yin!
Shouted the Knack MacFeagle.
Ton!
Ton!
It's, right...
Tetra!
The Kelder dropped something on the fire. A white flame roared up, etching the room in black and white. Verence blinked. When he managed to see again, there was a crossbow bolt sticking in the wall just by his ear. The Kelder growled some order, while white light still danced around the walls. The bearded pixie rattled his sticks again.
Now you must walk away. No!
The Fiegel let Verence go. He took a few tottering steps and collapsed on the floor, but the pixies weren't watching him. He looked up. His shadow twisted on the wall where it had been pinned. It writhed for a moment, trying to clutch at the arrow with insubstantial hands, and then faded. Verence raised his hand. There seemed to be a shadow there, too, but at least this one looked as if it was the regular kind. The old pixie hobbled over to him.
"All fine now," he said.
"You shot my shadow," said Verence.
"Hey, you could call it a shadow," said the pixie. "It's the fluence they put on you. But ye'll be up and about in that time."
"A boot?"
"A boot the place," said the pixie evenly. "All hail ye, kingly. I'm Big Aggie's man. Ye'd call me the Prime Minister, I'm hazardin. Will ye no have a huge dram and a burned bannock while ye waitin'?"
Verence rubbed his face. He did feel better already. The fog was drifting away.
"How could I ever repay you?" he said.
The pixie's eyes gleamed happily.
"Oh, there's a wee bitty thing, the curling aug, so you could be giving us. Hardly important at all," he said.
"Anything," said Verence.
A couple of pixies came up staggering under a rolled-up parchment, which was unfolded in front of Verence. The old pixie was suddenly holding a quill pen.
"It's called a signature,"
he said, as Verence stared at the tiny handwriting.
"And make sure ye initial all the subclauses and codicils. We of the Knack MacFeagle are a simple folk," he added, "but we write very, very complicated documents."
Mightily Oates blinked at Granny over the top of his praying hands. She saw his gaze slide sideways to the axe and then back to her.
"You wouldn't reach it in time," said Granny without moving. "Should have got hold of it already if you were going to use it. Prayer's all very well, I can see where it can help you get your mind right, but an axe is an axe, no matter what you believes."
Oates relaxed a little. He'd expected a leap for the throat.
"If Hodges Arg's made any tea, I'm parched," said Granny.
She leaned against the anvil, panting. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw his hand move slowly.
I'll man with his head screwed on properly, that Falconer. A biscuit wouldn't come amiss."
Oates's hand reached the axe handle.
"Still not quick enough," said Granny. "Keep hold of it, though. Axe first, pray later. You look like a priest. What's your god?" "That a he-god or a she-god?"
"A he, yes, a he, definitely a he." It was one thing the church hadn't schismed over, strangely. "You don't mind, do you?"
"Why should I mind?"
"Well, your colleagues keep telling me that the Omnians used to burn witches."
"They never did," said Granny.
"I'm afraid I have to admit, that the records show..."
"They never burned witches," said Granny. "Probably they burned some old ladies who spoke up or couldn't run away.
I wouldn't look for witches being burned," she added, shifting position.
"I might look for witches doing the burning, though.
We ain't all nice.
Oates remembered the Count talking about contributing to the Arca Instrumentorum. Those books were ancient, but so were vampires, weren't they? And they were practically canonical. The freezing knife of doubt wedged itself deeper in his brain. Who knew who really wrote anything? What could you trust? Where was the Holy Writ? Where was the truth? Granny pulled herself to her feet and tottered over to the bench, where Hodge's Ark had left his jar of flame. She examined it carefully. Oates tightened his grip on the axe. It was, he had to admit, slightly more comforting than prayer at the moment. Perhaps you could start with the small truths, like he had an axe in his hand.
I want to be certain, he said. Are you a vampire?
Granny Weatherwax appeared not to hear the question.
Where's Hodges Arg with that tea? She said.
The falconer came in with a tray.
Nice to see you up and about, Mistress Weatherwax.
Not before time.
The tea slopped as she took the proffered cup. Her hand was shaking.
Hodges Arg?
Yes, mistress.
So, you've got a firebird here, have you?
No, mistress.
Well, I saw you out hunting it.
And I found it, miss. But it had been killed. There was nothing but burnt ground, miss.
You'd better tell me all about it.
Is this the right time? Said Oates.
Yes,
said Granny Weatherwax. Oates sat and listened. Hodges Ark was an original storyteller and quite good in a very specific way. If he'd had to recount the saga of the Tsortian War, for instance, it would have been in terms of the birds observed. Every cormorant noted, every pelican listed, every battlefield raven taxonomically placed, no term unturned. Some men in armour would have been involved at some stage, but only because the ravens were perching on them.
The phoenix doesn't lay eggs, said Oates at one point.
This was a point a few points after the point where he asked the falconer if he'd been drinking.
She's a bird, said Hodges Arg. That's what birds do. I've never seen a bird that doesn't lay eggs. I collected the eggshell.
He scuttled off into the mews. Oates smiled nervously at Granny Weatherwax.
Probably a bit of chicken shell, he said. I've read about the phoenix. It's a mythical creature, a symbol. It, can't say for sure, said Granny. I've never seen one that close to.
The falconer returned, clutching a small box. It was full of tufts of fleece, in the middle of which was a pile of shell fragments. Oates picked up a couple. They were a silvery grey and very light.
I found them in the ashes.
No one's ever claimed to have found phoenix eggshell before, said Oates, accusingly.
Didn't know that, sir, said Hodges Arg innocently. Otherwise I wouldn't have looked.
Did anyone else ever look, I wonder, said Granny.
She poked at the fragments.
Ah, she said.
I thought perhaps the phoenixes used to live somewhere very dangerous,
Hodges Arg began.
Everywhere's like that when you're newborn, said Granny. I can see you've been thinking, Hodges Arg.
Thank you, Mistress Weatherwax.
Shame you didn't think further, Granny went on.
Mistress?
There's the bits of more than one egg here.
Mistress?
Hodges Arg, said Granny patiently, this phoenix laid more than one egg.
What?
But it can't, according to mythology,
Oates said.
Oh, mythology, said Granny. Mythology's just the folk tales of people who won because they had bigger swords. They're just the people to spot the finer points of ornithology, aren't they? Anyway, one of anything ain't gonna last very long, is it? Firebirds have got enemies, same as everything else. Give me a hand up, Mr. Oates. How many birds in the mews, Hodges Arg?
The falconer looked at his fingers for a moment.
50.
Counted them lately?
They stood and watched while he walked from post to post. Then they stood and watched while he walked back and counted them again. Then he spent some time looking at his fingers.
51, said Granny helpfully.
I don't understand it, mistress.
You'd better count them by types, then.
This produced a count of 19 lappet-faced warriors, where there should have been 18.
Perhaps one flew in because it saw the others, said Oates, like pigeons.
It doesn't work like that, sir, said the falconer.
One of them won't be tethered, said Granny. Trust me.
They found it at the back, slightly smaller than the other warriors, hanging meekly from its perch.
Fewer birds could sit more meekly than a Lancre wow hawk or lappet-faced warrior, a carnivore permanently on the lookout for the vegetarian option. It spent most of its time asleep in any case, but when forced to find food, it tended to sit on a branch out of the wind somewhere and wait for something to die. When in the mews, the warriors would initially perch like other birds and then, talons clamped around the pole, doze off peacefully upside down. Hodgesarg bred them because they were found only in Lancre and he liked the plumage, but all reputable falconers agreed that for hunting purposes the only way you could reliably bring down prey with a wow hawk was by using it in a slingshot. Granny reached out towards it. "I'll fetch you a glove," said Hodgesarg, but she waved him away. The bird hopped onto her wrist. Granny gasped, and little threads of green and blue burned like marsh gas along her arm for a moment. "Are you all right?" said Oates. "Never been better. I'll need this bird, Hodgesarg." "It's dark, mistress. That won't matter, but it'll need to be hooded." "Oh, I never hood wow hawks, mistress. They're never any trouble." This bird, said Granny, is a bird I reckon no one's ever seen before. Hood it." Hodgesarg hesitated. He recalled the circle of scorched earth, and before it, something looking for a shape in which it could survive. "It is a wow hawk, isn't it, mistress?" "And what makes you ask that?" said Granny slowly. "After all, you're the falconer in these parts." "Because I found, in the woods, I saw..." "What did you see, Hodgesarg?" Hodgesarg gave up in the face of her stare, to think that he'd tried to capture a phoenix. At least the worst the other birds could do was to draw blood, supposing he'd been holding it. He was overcome by a very definite burning desire to get this bird out of here. Strangely, though, the other birds weren't disturbed at all. Every hooded head was turned towards the little bird on Granny Weatherwax's wrist. Every blind, hooded head. Hodgesarg picked up another hood. As he fastened it over the bird's head, he thought for a moment that there was a flash of gold from underneath. He put that down as not his business. He'd survived quite happily in the castle for many years by knowing where his business was, and he was suddenly very clear that it wasn't here, thank goodness. Granny took a few deep breaths. "Right," she said. "Now we'll go up to the castle."
"What for? Why?" said Oates. "Good grief, man, why'd you think?"
"The vampires are gone," said the priest. "While you were getting better, Mr. Hodgesarg found out. They've just left the soldiers and the servants. There was a lot of noise, and the coach went too. There's guards all over the place."
"How did the coach get out, then?"
"Well, it was the vampires' coach, and their servant was driving it, but Jason Ogg said he saw Mrs. Ogg too." Granny steadied herself against the wall.
"Where did they go?"
"I thought you could read their minds or something," said Oates.
"Young man, right now I don't think I can read my own mind."
"Look, Granny Weatherwax, it's obvious to me you're still weak from loss of blood.
Don't you dare tell me what I am," said Granny. "Don't you dare. Now, where would Githa Ogg have taken them?"
"I think Uberwald," said Granny.
"That'll be it."
"What?
How can you know that?"
"Because nowhere in the village would be safe. She wouldn't go up to the gnarly ground on a night like this, and with a baby to carry as well. And heading down onto the plains would be downright daft, because there's no cover, and I wouldn't be surprised if the road is washed out by now."
"But that'll be right into danger."
"More dangerous than here," said Granny.
"They know about vampires in Uberwald. They're used to 'em.
There's safe places. Pretty strong inns all along the coach road, for a start.
Nanny's practical. She'll think of that, I'm betting."
She winced and added, "But they'll end up in the vampire's castle."
"Oh, surely not."
"I can feel it in my blood," said Granny. "That's the trouble with Githa Ogg. Far too practical." She paused.
"You mentioned guards."
"They've locked themselves in the keep, mistress,"
said a voice in the doorway. It was Sean Ogg, with the rest of the mob behind him. He advanced awkwardly, one hand held in front of him.
"That's a blessing, then," said Granny.
"But we can't get in, mistress," said Sean.
"So, can they get out?"
"Well, no, not really, but the armour is in there, all our weapons, and their booze in."
"What's that you're holding?"
Sean looked down.
"It's the Lancrustian army knife," he said. "I left my sword in the armoury, too."
"Has it got a tool for extracting soldiers from castles?"
No.
Granny peered closer. "What's this curly thing?" she said. "Oh, that's the adjustable device for winning ontological arguments," said Sean. "The king asked for it."
"Works, does it?"
If you twiddle it properly.
And this? That's the tool for extracting the essential truth from a given statement, said Sean.
Verence asked for that one too, did he?
Yes, Granny.
Useful to a, soldier, is it? Said Oates. He glanced at Granny. She'd changed as soon as the others had entered. Before, she'd been bowed and tired. Now she was standing tall and haughty, supported by a scaffolding of pride.
Oh, yes, sir. "'Cause of when the other side are yelling, "'we're going to cut your tongue off, your tongue off.'
"'Sean blushed and corrected himself. "'And things like that.'
"'Yes? Well, you can tell if they're going to be right,' said Sean.
"'I need a horse,' said Granny.
"'There's old poor chick's plough horse,' Sean began. "'Too slow.
I've got a mule,' said Oates. "'The king was kind enough to let me put it in the stables.'
"'Neither one thing nor t'other, eh?' said Granny. "'It suits you.
Hmm. That'll do for me, then. Fetch it up here, and I'll be off to get the girls back.'
"'What? I thought you wanted it to take you up to your cottage. Into Uberwald alone? I couldn't let you do that.
I ain't asking you to let me do anything. Now off you go and fetch it, otherwise Om will be angry, I expect.'
"'But you can hardly stand up.'
"'Certainly I can. Off you go.'
Oates turned to the assembled Lancrastians for support. "'You wouldn't let a poor old lady go off to confront monsters on a wild night like this, would you?' They watched him owlishly for a while, just in case something interestingly nasty was going to happen to him. Then someone near the back said,
"'So why should we care what happens to monsters?'
And Sean Ogg said,
"'That's Granny Weatherwax, that is.'
"'But she's an old lady,'
Oates insisted. The crowd took a few steps back. Oates was clearly a dangerous man to be around.'
"'Would you go out on a night like this?' he said.
The voice at the back said,
"'Depends if I knew where Granny Weatherwax was.'"